The following is a CSPN Media podcast presentation.
Good evening, good afternoon, and good morning, everyone. This is the next episode of the Wheelin' and Dealin' podcast. I am Neil Carter.
And I am Valissa Thompson.
And welcome to another great episode. Valissa, how are you doing?
I am great. I cannot believe we're already on episode 4. We are getting up there, Neil.
Yeah, I know. We're almost at episode 5. It's an exciting time.
I know.
Obviously, we want to make sure that folks, understand that we apologize for the delay in the time between shows, but Melissa and I are very busy.
Yes, we are some busy Negroes, and you have to excuse us, but we're happy to be back. I know I've been itching to get back to this old thing and hopefully be a more normal routine following the next few weeks.
Yep, and hopefully we're going to have we do have guests lined up. We are still working out the kinks as far as those guests are concerned, linking up schedules and things of that nature. So please bear with us as we get those guests lined up. We are so grateful for the support that we've been getting on Twitter and not via email. Folks still aren't emailing us. Don't really understand that. But you can certainly catch us on Twitter at Wheel and Deal Pod, and you can certainly email us as well at Wheel and Deal Pod at CSPN.us. Obviously, we want to thank our sponsors, first of which is Audible. You can go to audibletrial.com/wheelanddealpod and get one free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. And obviously, there's over 150,000 titles available at Audible, and highly recommend taking advantage of that. Because we certainly love books.
Yes, and also it'd be a good gift to give somebody as well. So yes. About, it's the holiday season, so
yes, want
to give a gift that would continue to give to the person, expanding their knowledge or giving them entertainment. What's better than a free book?
Exactly, exactly. Especially in audio form.
Exactly.
Let's get started. What did the 45 administration do this week?
What did the 45 administration do this week? This week was extra spicy with the with the first charges of indictments being handed down.
Yes, special prosecutor Robert Mueller came out with the indictments earlier this week, and obviously everyone was calling it hashtag Mueller Monday. no matter what social platform you were on or in person, people were just saying hashtag Mueller Monday, which was weird. But, it's a very exciting and interesting time. Obviously, the Mueller investigation has picked up. These are the first of many indictments. I imagine there were three major indictments today. The story, the first charges have been dropped in the special counsel Robert Mueller probe, and he took over the investigation into the Russia attack on last year's presidential election and whether the Trump campaign was involved. And now he's pretty much saying you got served. We have, the three main players who got indicted two main players that got indicted were Paul Manafort and Rick Gates. George Papadopoulos was the third, but he had already reported to the FBI and to the special counsel. So I believe, if I'm not mistaken, he was wearing a wire as well. So in D.C. at D.C. bars and bars across the country, there are already George Papadopoulos wire-related shots and drinks that have already been created. So please partake in those if you are so interested.
Yes.
But do not drink and drive.
No, be responsible. Be responsible.
So obviously, you know, with Paul Manafort, you know, for those that don't know, he's Trump's former campaign manager. Obviously, he had strong ties to the Ukrainian government, and people are just the writing had been on the wall as far as Paul Manafort was concerned. The concern from the Trump, the 45's administration is that he's going to flip. So obviously, when the indictments rolled out, 45 took it upon himself to do what he does. Whenever something comes out about his administration that isn't good, he goes on Twitter and rants about it for about 2.5 hours in tweet storms. I'm not going to go over the tweets that he said because those are irrelevant, and they are going to put him into more trouble than he actually realizes. If there is a obstruction of justice case, the real Donald Trump Twitter account is going to be the poster child for obstruction of justice cases now and certainly in the future. Mm-hmm. Because there is literally a tweet for everything as it relates to anything that comes out about that administration. The Paul Manafort situation, I think, is for 45 and the administration to go on record and say that, Paul Manafort was not, was there for such a short amount of time. His role in the campaign didn't matter. Is ridiculous. They said the same thing about George Papadopoulos. They framed him as a glorified super volunteer. And as someone who works in politics as a career, I know the difference between a super volunteer and someone who's paid staff, and George Papadopoulos was certainly paid staff. He was going to and representing the campaign on international, in international waters, and he was also going to events as the campaign spokesperson. I'm talking about George Papadopoulos, not Paul Manafort. Paul Manafort was going on television during the RNC, during the time of the RNC convention, and was saying things. There's clips all over the internet, but one of his famous clips, I forget the news network exactly, but the question was asked, does the Trump campaign have ties to the Ukrainian or Russian government? And Paul Manafort basically said, no, they don't. And clearly he was lying. Now there's actual video proof. So, yeah, it's pretty ridiculous how intense this, how ramped up this investigation has become, Melissa. I think and we'll have them available in our show notes for folks to take a look at, but the indictments themselves are pretty lengthy, but it's all there in black and white.
Mm-hmm. I just kind of laughed to myself because I'm like, it was only a matter of time before somebody get caught up. Right. And, we're approaching a year since 45 has been in office, and it took this long to get some charges against somebody. And I just think this is going to be the dominoes effect, as in the year approaches and coming into amazingly, or maybe not as amazingly, year two of this administration. No one is surprised. I don't see how anybody can be surprised that people are being indicted. I know people are excited, but this can be a very long, long journey, even though these charges are very lengthy. I'm not going to get excited until I see somebody in a jumpsuit behind bars because I don't trust nothing within the federal government at this point to do the right thing and lock these people up and many more that you will surely learn their names as more of these indictments roll out. But sometimes I wonder, how is this even real? it's just kind of that kind of out-of-body experience in a way when it comes to dealing with this administration and Trump continuously tweeting things. And I just really wish somebody would just take his Twitter away. And I know that we got a little joy earlier this week when
his Twitter was taken today for like 4 minutes.
Yeah, 4 minutes. When a Twitter employee whose last day was earlier this week decided to shut down 45's Twitter page, and we all got a little happy about it, but like Neil said, it was just for very, very limited time. But somebody had to do it. We are thankful for that employee. We hope that we never know their identity, because I don't even want to think about the wrath and fury that would come to that person. Right. But we thank you for your service in doing something that nobody within the administration would do, would be shutting him down on his Twitter page. But but it just, it's every day, you know, we wake up, you know, I think we said before a couple episodes, you know, just what's new now. And I don't know. It's like, I don't even know what to think about these charges. It's just a shit show that continues to go on, and I feel like it would never end.
And this is, and for those keeping score at home, as Lissa already said, this is only the, you know, the tip of the iceberg. For those of us who live at the intersections and are marginalized in general, we already have a distrust of the criminal justice system. Mm-hmm. So naturally, the reaction to white collar crimes by white men is something that is not common to see. So it's small victories for us watching this, but we still recognize that, you know, white collar crime gets almost pushed under the rug because there are prisons devoted to folks who are indicted for white collar crimes, and they are living lavishly compared to a lot of the other state and federal prisons across the country. That are either corporate sponsored or those that are not. So there is a stark difference between the two, almost two different prison systems.
Yeah, money talks. When you got money, you can go to the nice prison, you know, and really not be as impacted, you know, outside of not being able to roam freely. And I think that's why, you know, I have a hesitation to really be kind of celebrating as some of us are, because you know, we know that even if they do go behind bars, you know, they're not going to get a tenth of what others endure who are incarcerated. And these are white men with money and privilege, you know, so there's no telling how they may even, with a rap sheet of charges against them, they may not even serve a day in jail. Like, and that could be a reality too. So I think we all have to be a little prepared of what can occur when it comes to the indictments, and be prepared for anything. I think that's the mantra of this administration. Be prepared for anything. Even the things that look like a, you know, a surefire thing may not be so, with the ridiculous tricks and illegal activity that is upholded by this government and those within it.
So as far as the investigation is concerned, I would just say stay tuned. Mm-hmm. You know, if a member of the administration isn't getting fired, or they are stepping on themselves, which we will talk about later on the show, so stay tuned for that. if they're not falling over themselves or falling over their words, they are doing their due diligence to cause havoc. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times cause havoc on communities that they are not a part of.
Exactly.
So just stay tuned as far as this administration is concerned. And I just want to remind folks that, you know, again, you know, please follow us on Twitter at Wheel and Deal Pod, and, you know, please email us if you haven't, you know, email us at wheelanddealpod@cspn.us. Please.
We definitely want to hear from you all. We want to hear what you guys want us to talk about on the show. If there are important topics that, that matters to you, you know, bring us those suggestions. We are very open to doing that. And any guests, you know, suggestions as well, you know, who would you want to see on the show talking about those particular topics that are of importance, let us know as well.
All politics is local. There was a recent unfortunate attack in New York recently, and on a bike trail, no less, there was a young man who from Uzbekistan who not a lot is known about his motives, but it's understood that he took it upon himself to drive a white panel van through a bike trail, killing a handful of folks and injuring others. There are obviously anytime a attack happens, whether it be in New York or any other part of the country, we are certainly, our hearts and our thoughts are with the families affected. But I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that, for those of you who decided to make this situation about, to ramp up your Islamophobia, mm-hmm. Ramp up your anti-migrant vitriol, to ramp up your just general disdain for anyone black or brown, mm-hmm. is repugnant. Obviously, these kinds of incidents do not go unnoticed, but at the same time, New York as a city is, in my opinion, one of the more prepared cities for these situations and for these unfortunate incidents. And when folks take it upon themselves to make it about a particular religion or a particular faith, and we, there are a lot of interesting things that came out after the story, one of which is that Laura Loomer, who is an investigative reporter. I don't know if you saw this story, Valissa, but she went to she went to Twitter and basically a day after the incident occurred in New York, she went to Twitter and took a picture of two Muslimas wearing hijabs, mm-hmm. and I forget the intersection, so forgive me, but she took a picture of them just walking down the street and said, "I can't believe that these two young women, that these Muslims are just, that quote-unquote these Muslims are doing whatever they can to not, to just be out and open about their faith." And she also, when she didn't tweet that picture, she also did this long tweet storm, similar to what 45 does, about how she didn't want, she literally tweeted at Uber and at Lyft and said, "I don't want to be driven by Muslim or Arabic drivers." And she said it's very difficult to not get in a cab with a Muslim driver, cab, Uber, or Lyft. So Uber and Lyft reacted and subsequently banned her from both services. She brought this on herself.
Yes, she did.
She is everything that is wrong with this country, and I'm not, ashamed to say that. Mm-hmm. It is peak white woman victimhood,
mm-hmm.
and it's unfortunate that she assumed that when she was going to tweet at Lyft and tweet at Uber, she thought, "Oh, they're going to react and either give me a credit or make sure that my drivers aren't Muslim or mm-hmm. whatever the case." And I applaud both Lyft and Uber, who, at their own right, are under scrutiny consistently mm-hmm. as it relates to domestic violence and sexual violence with their drivers. Both services have a number of issues, and
they're both not accessible as well.
Right, exactly.
Also, an issue that we don't talk a lot about.
Exactly.
It comes to the both of them. And I think that her inappropriate, offensive, in every sense of the word, behavior is just white entitlement and thinking that you can just do whatever you want without consequences or say whatever you want and getting results when what you're doing or saying is you're revealing your true self, which is a bigoted, hateful person. And, it's always when these attacks happen and there are, and they involve people of color or those from other countries, that Islamophobia, and racism, it's like clockwork. It comes out every time. But when we have attacks by white men, like, from the previous episode, we talked about the Las Vegas attack, we don't get that at all.
Right.
And that's us telling ourselves and how we view people of color and how we view non-Christians and the level of ignorance that we have and the level of hate that we have for people who are not white, Christian, et cetera. You know, I think we all need to be very mindful as to the reporting that we are intaking that falls along those lines of persecuting a whole group for the actions of a small few, and the dangerous that is for members in that group who endure that. It's very horrendous that she took those pictures of those two women just because...
Without their consent.
Without their consent, and subjected them to possible harm if people recognize them. It just baffles my mind at the lack of consciousness we have in really addressing issues appropriately, really seeing things for what they are and not falling into these gross habits of ostracizing, isolating, and demeaning and demonizing an entire group of people. I just, you know, just, you know, the moment I heard about the attacks and, you know, I just knew, like I said, you know, the common script that comes out. And I think we all have a role to play in fighting against that and speaking up for our Muslim brethren, those who endure the harshest criticism of who they are and how they worship since 9/11, and just really doing what we can to protect them, to uplift them, you know, as well as also uplift those who have been affected by, you know, such attacks. We can do both at the same time. You know, we don't have to demonize one group while showing compassion for another. You know, it just really, you know, makes me sad that, you know, this is what we do every time. But, you know, people worry about those of different faiths harming us. But it's really the act of terrorism that happens in this country about white men, but we don't see that same outrage when white men do it. So I think that we are very hypocritical and contradictory in, you know, how we respond to these attacks,
right,
and whose communities, you know, are unjustly singled out, as we saw in the case with these two women being exploited, you know, without their consent, you know, with the picture being taken, but also the larger community having to be on guard as to possibly being attacked and ridiculed and harmed because people don't know how to be civil to each other.
And not only on that civility point, but also let's be clear that the that when the folks who are fans or supporters of 45's administrations and really supporters of his Muslim ban took it upon themselves to, after this most recent attack, decided to ramp up their, well, you know, we need to reinstate the Muslim ban because of, you know, this person was from Uzbekistan. Well, Uzbekistan wasn't on the Muslim ban list. So, and it would never have been because they're an ally of the United States. So, a loose ally of the United States. So this idea that that this country has gone above and beyond its Islamophobia and this anti-immigrant rhetoric has ramped up by mostly white middle class and working class folks who are being very open and honest all of a sudden about their racism, sexism, and misogyny. The hoods are off.
Yeah.
And they are being open and honest about who they are, and it's pretty disgusting.
It is. It is. And it's very interesting to see the hoods being off when you're scrolling on your social media page and you see some of those very people that you're friends with. So, right. You know, and you did, and it's very important to pay attention to that and to call those people out, because for some of those people, it's not just rhetoric that they're putting online, it's action they're willing to take in real life against people. So don't just blow somebody off because of what you're seeing, because these people, they have the ability to be out and loud about how they really feel, and do not think there would be any consequences to serve because of the example that's given at the top.
Exactly. Exactly.
All politics is theater.
obviously, you know, if this administration isn't, as we said before, stepping over themselves and making a fool of themselves in public, the House Republicans or the House Senate is doing the exact same thing. And a prime example of that would be Representative Matt Gaetz of Florida introducing a resolution calling on Special Counsel Mueller to resign from the Russia probe. Obviously, during the Mueller Monday situation, when the indictments had rolled out, there was a story that had come out literally on Sunday or the weekend prior about a Uranium One situation. And I don't know the particulars about that story. I'm not necessarily framing it as a non-story. Valissa, I don't know if you know anything, but I think it was picked apart pretty much on most mainstream media and mainstream and not mainstream media outlets on the left, center, and right. It's pretty much a non-story because it's been picked apart already. But Matt Gaetz took it upon himself to say that claiming that Mueller is hopelessly compromised because he ran the FBI when it was under investigation, when it was investigating a Russian nuclear energy company. And Gaetz argued that Mueller is compromised because he has personal or political relationship with the organization substantially involved with the conduct that is subject to the investigation. And the resolution also argued that the Mueller's participation in the Russia probe would create the appearance of conflict of interest likely to affect the public perception and integrity of the investigation. Now, as we said earlier, and as most of the listeners of this podcast know, the president is a walking and tweeting obstruction of justice. Whenever he goes on Twitter, whether it's the POTUS Twitter account, whether it's the real Donald Trump account, or even the White House account, there are literally obstruction of justice tweets associated with him and his administration. So for Representative Gaetz of Florida to put forth this resolution, we knew the resolution was coming as soon as the indictments were going to happen. It was just a matter of which representative was going to put forward the resolution. And obviously, they wanted to have it be a relatively new congressional representative and not one of the, you know, not a moderate Republican or the leadership in the House or the Senate. They wanted it to be a, you know, a low-ranking Republican member of the House. And, you know, I'm not surprised by this at all. I'm curious, Melissa, what your thoughts are, because obviously, you know, we both kind of expected this. And obviously, Representative Gaetz really doesn't have a strong legislative background, not just as it relates to his home district of Florida, because he's been a rubber stamp for the 45 administration and literally all of its policies. But for him to then turn around and basically act as an emissary to try to upend an investigation that hasn't even gotten off the ground yet in terms of the indictment process, because the investigation is ongoing, but the indictments are just starting. Like I imagine in the coming weeks, as we get closer and closer to the holiday season, there's going to be a number of indictments. So, this resolution is not surprising, but I don't think it's going to stop the investigation.
No, and I just feel that this is just another attempt to keep us from getting at the truth. And I am mad that he has allowed himself to be used in this way, because, you know, he's new in his role, you know, and, you know, I would not be putting my neck on the line for this administration. You know, if I was to do anything, I would either be quiet and unseen. It's not surprising, because you know somebody doesn't want to get to the bottom of the truth. And now I think it's fair for us to question what he's doing and anybody else that supports this ridiculous resolution. But I think that any time that we get an inch closer to uncovering what we all know has happened, there's going to be resolutions like this to come underway. So it's not surprising, but I think we all need to pay attention, because election season is coming up. Yep. You know, next week, by the time this podcast releases, as well as next year, and then in 2020, we need to pay attention to those who are putting forth these resolutions, who are sponsoring these resolutions, and get them out of office, because they don't want the truth to come to surface. They want our government to remain corrupt and vulnerable to the ill wills of this, you know, of this administration and, you know, other powers to be. So I, you know, for me, this is just a distraction that to keep us from unearthing what we all know has went down.
Exactly. So I'm curious. So obviously we were, you know, we hinted earlier that there was a secretary in the administration had fumbled all over himself or herself. And this week it was Rick Perry, right? Right, Melissa?
Yes. This week, Rick Perry said that fossil fuels can help prevent sexual assault by keeping the lights on. Yes, you heard that correctly. Electricity can help prevent sexual violence if we keep the lights on. During an event in D.C., Perry brought up sexual assault after launching into a story about a trip to Africa, where he said, quote, people are dying because they don't have access to energy. And he goes on to say, it is going to take fossil fuels to push power out into those villages in Africa, where a young girl said to my face, one of the reasons that electricity is so important to me is not only because I'm not going to have to try and read by the light of a fire and to have fumes literally kill people, he said, but also the standpoint of sexual assault. When the lights are on, you have the when you have light that shines, the righteousness, if you will, on those type of acts. I just got a headache just reading that. For you all, that is the most asinine thing I have heard. So, and I think this is very, in a way, timely, that we just recently had the Me Too campaign a couple of weeks ago on social media, where people came forth, you know, talked about their experiences with sexual violence, sexual assault, and rape. And
that was started by a black woman years ago,
yes,
by the way.
Yes. And
not hashtag charmed feminism, so none of them three little fake witches did feminism. That.
Not white feminism, but and I knew, and I was telling somebody that anytime I see a hashtag that goes viral and in that way, I always wonder who started it before. And I knew it had to be somebody else. So I was not surprised when the truth came out that campaign was 10 years in the making already.
Right.
But I think that Rick Perry is making light of such, and no pun intended, making light of such a very serious issue that we do not discuss openly, that carry so much stigma and shame for the survivors of sexual violence. And we do not do enough to bring those who are the perpetrators to justice.
Exactly.
For him to say that keeping the lights on is a way to prevent this is, I have no words for how out of touch, how ignorant, how insensitive, how just, and lack of a better phrasing, a damn fool Rick Perry is to say something like this. And he is being the Secretary of Energy. My God.
A job he didn't even want and couldn't even name when he ran for president. When he was asked, can you name five departments in the U.S. government? And energy was not one that he couldn't name. And he is now the Secretary of the Department. I don't understand. Like, but, you know.
I just think that he is the epitome of white privilege. And like he really is. Like the white man that doesn't know anything but got the high position. That is Rick Perry as our Secretary of Energy. But I just really feel that him thinking that energy is going to keep people from being sexually assaulted, particularly in Africa. And I'm so tired of white people using Africa in this way to talk about things and then getting it horribly wrong, as Rick Perry did. Africa is the pitiful continent. Africa is thriving. Africa, just leave Africa alone. Stop going there. Stop doing your missionary work. Africa is fine. Africa knows what it needs to do. There are great advocates and work being done there. I am so tired of the white savior people thinking that they know Africa better than Africans know their own continent. That's a whole tirade I'm just not going to go into right there. But I just really hate how he's using what this young lady, you know, his quote-unquote, you know, communication with this young lady as a way to spread such harmful propaganda that does not do any type of work to really solve the sexual violence epidemic that exists in our country, in Africa, and everywhere else in the world. It just gives me a headache. Like, when I saw that earlier this week, I'm like, this fool did not. I have no words for Rip Perry and men like him who think they have the answer to sexual violence and really ignoring, you know, what happens to those who experience this circumstance. I just really wish that white male cisgender heterosexual men would just be quiet, you know, on things that they have no business talking about when they are spewing very harmful ideology and misinformation in this way.
Exactly. And I could not have said it any better myself. And speaking of situations that are ridiculous, Felissa, I'm going to leave the floor to you to bring up a situation. I know you just came back from the women's conference. And for those who hadn't got a chance to hear her panel, I believe it is on the Women's March website. And I believe you're on more than one panel, so I'm sorry. But all the content related to Felissa being on the Felissa being on, at the Women's Convention is on their website, so please check that out. But yeah, didn't you have a situation with an airline?
Yes, so on my way to Detroit last weekend, I was flying from Columbia to Charlotte and then making my connection from Charlotte to Detroit in the late evening. And I was flying American Airlines, and my trip to Columbia to Charlotte was great until I realized they lost a wheelchair. For some of you that may not know, new listeners, I am a wheelchair user. And though I can walk, the wheelchair, as I always like to jokingly say, move faster than my legs. So the wheelchair is thus my legs to be able to get around. The wheelchair is my freedom. I call her Sapphire because she is a pretty shade of blue, and that is my birthstone. So me and Sapphire have a very loving relationship. And I did not discover that the wheelchair was gone until they deboarded me off the plane. And I was like, oh, so where's the wheelchair? Waiting to be transferred from the aisle chair to my chair. And the guy who took out some of the luggage said, I didn't see a wheelchair on the aircraft. So he goes back and looked, and there was no wheelchair. So the first thought in my mind is, how do you lose a whole-ass wheelchair? And it turns out that someone did not put the wheelchair on the plane. It was still sitting at the jet bridge in Columbia. So it was just a very devastating thing to endure for those, I'd say probably 12 to 13 hours of not having my chair. Luckily, I was stuck in Charlotte where I know people, and a great friend of mine who I've known since grad school was able to come to my side and you know, be with me, and I was able to go back to their place for the night. But it was just a very horrendous experience, and it wasn't until this happened to me that I learned that American Airlines has one of the worst track records when it comes to assistive devices, such as wheelchairs, and either damaging them or losing them compared to other airlines. I, of course, use the power of social media to let everybody know that this has happened to me, and those in the disability community, those on Black Twitter, those within the Women's March tweeted continuously to American Airlines, and someone, whoever's over their social media on the Twitter page, reached out to me and was giving me updates on what was going on. In the meantime, you know, I was wheelchairless. I had to go to another airline to get a loaner chair that had no cushion, no feet rest, or a seatbelt. And as someone who has a brittle bone disability, that's not quite the safe device I should be given, but it was either that or wait 1 to 3 hours for the process to be gone through when it comes to getting a loaner chair of American Airlines, which I did tell them later on that is a very inconvenient policy. Then once you have to wait 1 to 3 hours to get a loaner chair when it was your, you know, lack of better phrasing, fuck up. And that's basically what
well
a fuck up.
Well,
I'm just keeping it 100. Like, you know, excuse the language, but this is what this was. You fucked up. Someone did not do their job, and now here I am inconvenienced and vulnerable to somebody's mistake. And I understand that people go, well, luggage is lost all the time. No, my Witcher is not luggage. And it's really a shame that airlines are treating assistive devices like wheelchairs, walkers, canes, etc. as luggage. There are lifelines. There are lifelines to our independence. There are lifelines to our freedom. They are a part of our bodies, just like our hair, our nails, our skin. And when I don't have my wheelchair, I am vulnerable. I am not able to move freely as I should be able to. And to not have my chair because somebody did not do their job isn't something that no one should have to go through. They did rectify the incident. I got a voucher on my trip to Detroit that morning. And they put me in first class and they made sure I got on the plane. And then when I came back from Detroit, they made sure the process was smooth there. But I shouldn't have to get special treatment because of somebody's error that really disadvantaged me in a way that nobody should. So, you know, I think that, you know, one of the great things about this podcast is that we are able to talk about intersections of being disabled and really allowing you all to really think about how other people exist, you know, on this earth and some of the unfair situations we have to endure based on policies, based on errors that really impede our quality of life. It took everything in me to not go off at the moment because, you know, I'm not allowed as a Black woman to be rightfully angry in public and to really in some way show my ass when it's necessary. So I had to really be dignified in a not so dignifying situation to where my dignity was not considered in people getting my wheelchair where it needs to be so that me and my wheelchair can really go about our business accordingly. So yeah, this is a call out in a way to get people to understand how it's flying the not so friendly skies as a wheelchair user can be a horrendous experience. And luckily for me, the chair was lost and was found. And there are other cases of people that I know who fly like I do, the chairs have been broken. It takes more than 12 hours for them to locate the chair, to get it back. And for those of us who fly, you know, we're flying for a reason, you know, whether it's for business, for personal, and to be held up in this way, you know, is not what we should endure, and it's not something that should be common practice with these airlines, but sadly it is, and I think it's important to bring this on the consciousness of others who may not be disabled or may not know of disabled people who travel or just not know about this incident at all, that this is the reality of many.
Right.
And I'm not sure about, you know, your travel experiences or what you've endured or what you've seen from others, but you know, this is my first time dealing with this. And, you know, I have a trip coming up, you know, in tomorrow, actually, Sunday. And it makes me nervous, you know, to even think about this happening again and being further away and not having, you know, someone that I know be able to be with me and, you know, help me kind of deal with the issue at the time.
Right. So for me, obviously, you know, I certainly empathize with your situation, mainly due to the fact that I too have experienced this in the past. Not so much a lost chair, but I've certainly had a chair broken. I've had to replace axles after they were. I had to replace an axle after it was snapped in half by airplane staff because they didn't know how to fold the chair. I don't have that chair anymore, I've also almost had my Loftstrain canes snapped in half because they said you couldn't take them on the plane. You had to put them under the plane, which is ridiculous. I should have them with me at all times if I travel with them. And it's part of the reason that to be fully transparent, I use a sports wheelchair now when I'm not using my Loftstrain canes. And that sports wheelchair, when I played semi-pro professional basketball, I didn't travel with the team that I played with, or I had another chair with me when I traveled, mainly because I didn't want that this chair that I still use to this day to be broken, because this chair costs a considerable amount of money, and the company that makes this particular brand of chair doesn't even make this chair anymore, so it's one of a kind, and I couldn't be in a situation where this chair was destroyed, broken, because there are no replacement parts for it. Mm-hmm. And I know that I'm not the only, obviously with your situation, obviously you and I are not the only people that this happens to. Mm-hmm. Our community, when we travel, if we're not being displaced or our items aren't being displaced, then our independence is taken away from us, because we have people who will, as I'm sure you can probably attest to, Valissa, if you are transitioning from one chair to the chair that they have for the particular airline, they may, if you are traveling by yourself, they will take it upon themselves to think that, oh, well, you can't push yourself, so let me push you. We could do a whole entire conversation, and we will, with disability advocates about consent as it relates to the disability community. Mm-hmm. And as it relates specifically, as an example, to people who don't know you pushing you without consent. It's an incredibly wide-ranging topic, but it's something that happens on a daily basis, and especially with travel.
Yes.
We will talk about that at another time, but certainly want to make sure that situations like Valissa's happen less frequently. Mm-hmm. But we also want to highlight the airlines that did a disservice to her and did frankly fuck up, and then the airlines that did pick up the ball and helped you, like Delta. Mm-hmm. Even though Delta does a terrible job of deplaning people that shouldn't be deplaned. So again, airlines aren't perfect, right? it's something that is travel is a wide ranging topic we could talk about. Tamika Mowry, who is one of the coordinators for the Women's Conference, I know had a recent issue with another airline, or I think it was American. Actually.
Yeah, it was American, because I've met Tamika at the conference, so yes, it was American.
So, where she was taken off the plane unjustly, and she's dealing with a court case right now. So, as it relates to that airline, so
and don't forget the NAACP ban on American as well.
Exactly. Exactly.
Which, yes, that had came out a couple of days before my incident, and I was like, well, damn. That's all I can say. Well, damn. But flying as a disabled person can be a horrendous experience, and we definitely want to make you all aware of how we navigate this world differently than those of you who may not have disabilities or these visible disabilities and use certain equipment. And I think that's very important, so that we can all be conscious of, of how we are impacted in different ways. And like Neil said, I know when I fly, I make sure they know how to fold my chair up, because it is foldable. And I try to do the best that I can to prevent breakage, breaking or, losing, but there's only so much you can do.
Right.
And airlines don't value your stance as a consumer and prioritize giving you the utmost service as everybody else.
Exactly. Now, speaking about lifting up those in the disabled community, I want to get into our unsung hero of the week.
An unsung hero of the week.
A young girl, Maria Hernandez, who was born with cerebral palsy. She is a migrant, and her family was dealt a recent blow because ICE agents and Border Patrol agents took it upon themselves when she was in the middle of surgery, routine surgery that those with cerebral palsy deal with on a consistent basis. She was getting routine surgery at a hospital in the United States, and she was in the middle of the surgery. The surgeons had to stop because ICE agents came into the OR and detained Rosa. And they were planning to and actually were in the process of deporting her back to Mexico. Now, this is something... Rosa's story is not unique, because this certainly happens to kids all across the country. It just so happens that Rosa's got attention. And the hope with Rosa's getting attention is that more stories like hers get the attention they rightfully deserve.
I just could imagine being 10 years old and enduring what Rosa did. How scared and she must have been. I couldn't even imagine, like, her family, like, the sheer terror. You know, it's so heartbreaking. It's so angering that anybody would be treated this way by a child that is not a threat to this country.
Right.
You know, in any capacity, would be handled in such a vile way. And, you know, there's been this campaign, you know, since the story broke out about Free Rosa. And I know that Catherine Perez, who is the head of the National Council for Latinx with Disabilities, wrote an article for NOS Magazine about the undocumented, those who are undocumented and disabled. And they just, you know, sheds an incredible light on that population that don't really get as much attention as it does when we talk about immigration status and deportation and how disabled people of color are, you know, how they're mistreated and disadvantaged during things like this. And, you know, how do you not have compassion for a child who just had surgery? Like, you know, just seeing some of the video earlier this week, you know, about, you know, these officers standing outside of a little girl room, you would think that she was, you know, a serial killer, the way that they were surrounding her.
Right. And
it's just heartbreaking. And, you know, just think about the trauma that she may have, you know, from this experience. You know, I don't think that we understand how people are negatively impacted psychologically when they endure these things. And, you know, I think that's something we need to pay attention to and uplift Rosa. And, you know, I'm glad for her, you know, for her to be released. But like you were saying, you know, she is one of many who endures this type of injustice. And we really have to recognize the harm that is being done to countless thousands of people in this country who endure similar fate as Rosa, who, you know, in some ways aren't as lucky to be released as she was.
Right.
I just, you know, I'm not a parent, but I just imagine, I can't even imagine, like, if this was my child, what I would do. It just is, like I say, just heartbreaking that we treat, you know, immigrants like, we treat them worse than animals. You know, like, people treat their pets better than they do fellow human beings. And it makes no sense for anybody to go through an ordeal like this. Like, no, this was 100% preventable. Nobody, this should not be another Rosa, you know, to endure something like this. And, you know, we definitely had to uplift Rosa as our unsung hero, because she went through something that nobody, particularly no child, should have to endure.
And we certainly want to make sure that Rosa's family gets the support that they deserve.
Yes.
We're glad that the situation with her, she is back home with her family. We are also glad that her family in Mexico was able to receive her when she was deported. Even though they had no intention of receiving her, they were able to receive her.
Right.
And that transition was incredibly traumatizing, because, again, they were in the middle of surgery.
Right.
It wasn't post-surgery. It wasn't pre-surgery. They were in the middle of surgery. So I commend the hospital that had to deal with that entire situation to handle it in the manner that they did, because some hospitals wouldn't know what to do. In a situation like that, it's not something that happens often, and yeah, I think,
and it shouldn't happen at all.
No, not at all.
It shouldn't happen at all, and it's, you know, I'm glad the hospital handled it the way it did, but they shouldn't have to even be prepared to handle something as thoughtless and, you know, as something like that. Like, it's not, you know, it's inconceivable as to, you know, what Rosa endured.
Exactly. So, I want to transition again to what we're reading. We have a few great articles that we want to talk about before we close out the show this week. We want to highlight them real quick. Mm-hmm. The first is from the Odyssey Online, talking about Black mental health and intersectionality, mm-hmm. and understanding mental illness from an intersectional lens, and how it is imperative to address that. Obviously, Black mental health is something that is stigmatized. Mm-hmm. It's something that, in my opinion, doesn't get addressed that often. We have situations where, situations of depression, manic or otherwise, or so many other ranging situations and ranging mental health issues in our community, in the Black community, that don't get talked about. And it's really a generational, in my opinion, avoidance, mm-hmm. That doesn't get talked about, whether it be on social media platforms or not. There are people that you can talk to, professionals. Mm-hmm. And I do understand the generational stigma, because there is a general distrust from Black people, from Black and brown people, of doctors, of any profession or any practice. We can go from a chattel slavery standpoint to Sarah Bartman. Yeah. And how her body was not only put on display, but it was literally picked apart by multiple physicians for, as they framed it, study, but it wasn't study, right? So because of that generational stigma, we fast forward to today, where Black families don't want to address the ranging mental health concerns that they have. And they don't want to reach out to doctors because of that historical stigma, because of that generational stigma, because they were always taught, well, you don't need to talk to a doctor because you can talk to your family. Well, sometimes the family is part of the reason,
yep.
that you may be having either a disconnect or just a certain concern for your own mental health. They may be that trigger. Your family may be that trigger. So for you to just talk to your family is sometimes and oftentimes not the best thing to do.
No, definitely. I know that we always talk about, just pray about it. And prayer, your personal faith, prayer is important. But sometimes prayer is not the remedy, to getting you to be where you want to be. And I think that one of the things I really love about our generation is that we are speaking out about mental illness and taking ownership of our mental health and speaking publicly and seeking the supports and services that we need. As a social worker, I always give people advice on, if they want to find a culturally competent therapist, what does that mean? Particularly since, it's hard to find therapists or counselors who share your racial identity. I know that for many of us, that's very important criteria for them to have, because you can have a connection with that person. You can talk about those cultural differences, and at times they may be more comfortable bringing in those spiritual elements that may matter to you versus a therapist that is not of color. So, I really think that articles like this really show us taking control over the narrative and doing away with the silence that has endured our community for so long and has caused many of us to endure great pains without receiving the support that they need. So I really felt that this article was, very key to really keeping a conversation going and empowering those of us who have seek support or, are getting on that path to being comfortable to seek support and to know that you're not alone. I think that's the key thing that the articles do, and that that it's not just you. It's not, you being quote unquote extra. Sometimes those sad feelings, are justified and they're not, unfounded. Just really giving a voice to what you're enduring, I think sometimes can be the most powerful thing that a person needs to really get the help that they deserve, to live their best life in the way that matters to them. So I really love seeing people in our community really talk about their truth and being honest with what mental illness looks like. That's not the white narrative that tends to dominate the conversation. You know, these articles are just very important, and, you know, we're, you know, always going to uplift those who may need them the most, and encourage you to read and, you know, find that community and find more articles that aligns with what you may need to learn to be the best you and to get the help that you may need.
And we will certainly lift up that article in the Odyssey Online in our show notes after this episode is posted. So please check it out. Also, another great article that we're reading, a upcoming guest on our show, Rebecca Coakley, who is a Center for American Progress fellow, wrote an article with some other awesome Center for American Progress fellows, Rebecca Vallis and one other young woman. And the article was centering the quiet attack on the ADA, which is making its way through Congress, H.R. 620. We've talked about H.R. 620, not to a full extent yet, because I wanted to kind of tease it out a little bit with the content. Obviously, it is making its way through Congress. This article highlights many of its issues and how this bill actually made its way through Congress last session. It obviously didn't make it to the Senate and didn't get signed by then President Obama, but it certainly is making its way again, and it has a considerable level of support, quote-unquote bipartisan support. Many Democrats from California are supporting this bill, and some in New York as well. So this bill does considerable damage to Title III as it relates to the ADA. Right now, Title III gives persons with disabilities the rights to file lawsuits against proprietors of businesses that lack reasonable accommodations. And despite businesses' obligations to take these proactive steps towards accessibility, litigation has been a mechanism through which many gains for people with disabilities have been achieved since 1990. In contrast, the ADA Education and Reform Act, you would think on paper that that name means that it actually enhances the ADA, but it actually doesn't do that at all. It actually takes the teeth out of the ADA and removes that those Title III protections, would fundamentally weaken the process in ways that would make prohibitively burdensome for people with disabilities to enforce these longstanding civil rights rules. And like I said, there are many Democrats who are currently supporting this bill. Two Democrats recently came off as co-sponsors, one of which was Bobby Rush, which I was really happy to see. But that's not to say that this bill won't see the light of day on the House floor. So as we gear up towards Election Day in Virginia and New Jersey, but also in municipal areas across the country, obviously we'd be remiss if we did, and we're going to certainly share through our social media accounts all of the ways in which you can connect to get out the vote in these important municipalities and, you know, statewide in Virginia and New Jersey. I'd be remiss if I didn't highlight this article, mainly due to the fact that this piece of legislation could do harm on a local level, and we could see local versions of this bill come to fruition in upcoming state legislators next year. So if this bill fails in Congress, I do have a level of concern that it could go through the Senate relatively easily and pretty much under the radar. I don't know if they have the votes in the House, but it is one of those bills that isn't being focused on right now because everyone is talking about the tax bill that is losing support from Republicans right now. It's kind of hemorrhaging support. Whereas bills like this one are gaining steam and gaining support, but it's so under the radar and people aren't really talking about it, that's part of the issue, right? Mm-hmm. And because it has quote-unquote bipartisan support, no one is really paying attention to it. It's, you know, made its way out of the Judiciary Committee and could be on the House floor any day now. So there is a level of concern from those of us in the disability community and disability advocates about this particular legislation. So we certainly will provide this link to this story in our show notes. Melissa, do you have any thoughts on this before we close out the show?
Yes, I think that, you know, this act, you know, as we've seen this year, you know, it's a steady attack on disability rights that's going to continue, whether it's healthcare, whether it's, you know, the ADA, you know, this is going to be a continuous battle that our community is going to have to be a part of every day, every month, you know, for however long we have this administration. And I think that the fact that this bill has bipartisan support really shows the ignorance of Democratic leaders and how bipartisan support does not mean that a bill is good, particularly when people are ignorant as to the ramifications of what a bill that may be enacted could do for this community. So just as we like to talk about how we need to hold Republicans accountable, we need to hold these Democrats accountable as well, who support this bill, and to call them out and tell them that you are on the wrong side of this issue and you need to not vote for this or pull your support if you have co-sponsored this in a way. I just, you know, the attack on disability rights is a human rights issue, and it affects those of us who are within certain margins, you know, more in more ways than others. So I think we need to pay full attention to the movement of this act and everything else that happens, seems like every day, you know, whether with this administration or with this Congress, when it comes to dwindling our rights and not increasing them, and not being fooled by those who may support this, who may just be as ableist or as ignorant about our lives as those that we know are just as, who we know are our enemies. So I think, you know, just keeping aware of what's going on, following policies and reading the works of those from CAP and other entities who are shedding a light on disability issues that do go on the radar, and how, you know, these issues will impact our community and then how it can spread out into the broader society. So, you know, it's another day, another fight for our rights. It's not just getting new rights, it's keeping the ones that we have.
Exactly. And on that note, thank you for listening to this episode of Wheeling and Dealing Pod. Please stay tuned for future episodes, and we may have some, as we teased, we may have some guests from the Cold Slither Podcast Network.
Yes.
On an upcoming episode. So stay tuned.
Get ready. Get ready, because it's going to be fire.
Thank you all again.
Thank you all.